You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Club, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.
About Unchained Melody, and I couldn't remember how the song goes.
Thanks, Kevin. You
know, thanks.
That's Patrick, great. What's his name? I can't remember the actor's name from Ghost.
Patrick Swayze?
Yeah, Patrick Swayze. Why is he in a shell? Help, I'm in a shell. And then I realized it wasn't funny, so I decided not to do the joke, but instead thought it'd be much funnier to explain a joke that never happened.
It wasn't funnier than a joke with an explanation.
Or no joke with an explanation of why you didn't tell it.
See, that's I just decided to go with Ghost in the what the hell.
I think one of the things I said when we were talking about this ahead of time was that this movie version of Ghost in the Shell feels more like a shell without a ghost than it does like vice versa. You know, it's very pretty. It's you know, lots of beauty throughout this thing, but somehow feels kind of hollow and cold.
Yeah.
Superficial.
Perhaps. Like all the acting.
Yeah.
I didn't really have a problem so much with the acting.
It was fine. It was just the plot and kind of everything else.
Yeah. Well, like the stuff that makes it a movie.
Yeah.
Like, I swear the director went to Scarlett Johansson and said, okay, remember, your character has no emotions and no affect whatsoever. Stick to that.
It seemed like there was some amount of confusion, like, with that at first. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, you know you're not a robot, right?
Until the plot calls for it, we're like, oh no, now you have to emote at this point.
Right, there's almost like she's like felt safe in being a robot, but I suppose the plot actually involves that to some degree. She is confused with not referring to herself almost as a unique individual, as a person rather than a machine.
One of the parts of the film I actually did like was the fact that they mentioned that she feels nothing.
She has no nerves.
That concept is kind of terrifying to me.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
No pleasure, no pain. And so, yeah, you would be cut off. You would be more robotic.
No, nothing tactile anyway.
Yeah. So I guess in that sense, it does work. So.
At the same time, I'm still totally willing to put my brain in a beautiful robot body right now. I'm ready. I'm like, I've felt enough. It's fine.
Right.
Like, it'll be a little hard when you walk by a pizza stand when you're like, oh. I remember how good that was.
Yeah, but now you can eat it and not gain a pound.
Yeah. You can't experience it. You can't enjoy
it. It's all price to pay for eternity.
And what's worse, taking a dump or, like, emptying out the food drawer out of your stomach? You know, ugh, I gotta wash out my
food
drawer.
Your robot sucks. No kidding.
Well, you gotta expel stuff if you eat it, you know, somehow. this is directed by Rupert Sanders, who previously was known for directing the Snow White and the Huntsman, film that was very pretty but seemed to be missing something.
And a main character who doesn't ever emote.
That is true. Yeah. That's Kristen's whole acting style, though. anyway, like, if you've never, you may be one of the people out there who have not had any experience with this anime, and you're like, I don't get it. So is it like, does it take place under the sea? Are there ghosts? No, Ghost in the Shell refers to, quite specifically, someone whose brain has, a human brain has been put in an entirely robot body, which is Scarlett Johansson's character of the Major here. She is, like, got a completely organic brain, but her soul, as it were, is the ghost in this robot shell. And after we see her being built, basically, in the beginning of this film, it's made clear that the corporation who built her works in tandem with a group, what is it, Section 9?
Section 9, they're the counterterrorism unit of the government.
Of the government, yes, exactly. And they're like, well, we're going to need to use her for operations, like, immediately. Despite the fact her doctor, played by Juliette Binoche, is kind of like, but I wanted to make her my daughter. Or something. I don't about.
There's a complicated relationship between the two that never gets explored.
And so it flashes almost immediately to she's going into her operation. She's teamed up with this guy played Batu, played by Pilo Asabek. Who is it he played in Game of Thrones?
He played Ewan Greyjoy.
There you go. And they're badasses. And the problem is they found out that there is some cyber terrorist who is being known as Kuze, who is killing all the heads of this people who work for the robotics corporation that made her, and they're trying to figure out why. And of course, as we start to go into this, she starts slowly realizing that she actually has some kind of connection with this guy, which, of course, I'm not going to go into spoilers for that, but is the thrust of the whole third act on, where it's really halfway through the second act on of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Changes everything and her whole perspective on what's happening.
You don't have to go into spoilers because they spoiled it for you in the trailer.
Do they?
Oh, yeah. They make it pretty clear about the relationship between, like, Kuze and the Major and where she comes from.
But, you know, I mean, so for people who refuse to watch trailers, we won't till after we get past our ratings, we can talk a little bit more seriously about that. I will say, like, really nice to see Takeshi Kitano, known as Beat Takeshi, playing the boss of Section 9. I was so worried that he wasn't going to get a chance to shoot anybody, because why would you even put Beat Takeshi in a movie if he's not going to shoot some motherfuckers?
He gets his badass moment in this.
He does. They totally hand him, like, okay, you're old, but you can still shoot a bunch of motherfuckers in the head.
Also, I love the fact that continuing his trend of not giving any fuck, he speaks Japanese. The rest of his entire outfit speaks English. There is never a question of, like, why does he speak Japanese? Why do they understand him? Nope, just like, he just speaks Japanese. Roll with it.
Yeah, he's like, I'll do this movie, but if you think I'm going to learn phonetic English to do it, you can go suck my dick.
You know, it's funny they put him in there, because I was thinking, this movie reminded me a lot of Johnny Mnemonic, mm-hmm. and sort of these very 90s ideas of, like, cyberpunk and...
It was like Johnny Mnemonic meets Demolition
and
Man.
In Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah.
And so I kept thinking it felt like such a weird callback to that for me the whole movie. And then I remember they put him in Johnny Mnemonic so that they could sell the movie better overseas. There was like 15 more minutes of him in the overseas version. And this felt like that to me. Like, he felt like a very extraneous character through a lot of the movie.
And it's all the influences dovetailing, because Johnny Mnemonic comes from the William Gibson cyberpunk era, which is one of the biggest influences on the original Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah. I mean, it had invented pretty much everything that Ghost in the Shell does.
Sorry, the cat likes to eat hairs.
Yeah, head. It's...
it's a tasty looking head.
There's an internal business going on.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry.
I was watching. I was being bad. I was just waiting. I saw it about to happen, and I said nothing. I was like, ooh, this should be fun.
I wasn't going to say anything, because I'm a professional.
You know, like, as we mentioned, like, very pretty. There's a lot going on. This is one of these films where they're just filling it up with detail.
Yeah.
And if anything, there's a problem with that is just that it felt like it needed another pass or three. There's a lot of sequences where I'm like, yeah, that CG wasn't so hot.
Yeah, there's never a moment where you can tell when they subbed in the CG stunt doubles because they lose all weight.
Yeah, weightless is the way I thought of the CGI through almost the entire movie. And I think, like, he seems to be a director who's far more interested in his visuals and his CGI and his ideas like that than he is in performance or you know, story. So,
and in fairness, one of the things I did like about this movie was that it's based on the manga by Masamune Shirow. And Shiro has a very, very complicated and detailed art style, and it's gotten even more so ever since he started incorporating, like, computer graphics into his art. And so he has these, like, visually rich, almost overloaded scenes of the city and all of this visual detail in almost distracting levels, and they really kind of captured that in that feel in this, and it's kind of what gives it the, like, what you said when we were before we started recording, like, Blade Runner light almost.
Yeah it's not even Blade Runner better lit,
yeah,
certainly, but it does feel like that same city 200 years later, but there's been a clean up the city campaign. Like, there was a Giuliani that came along and, like, cleaned it all up and added a bunch more lights, but now it's, like, so busy with ads everywhere, like holographic ads, that it's like, who would want to live there?
I just kind of felt it was really overwhelming. Whereas, like, when they didn't have as many of those lights, when it was few, like, when they had, like, more of the practical effects, particularly during, like, this one action sequence, it worked really well. But when you have all these things, you know, all these CGI characters and advertisements, it felt fake to me. I know, I guess that's kind of the point, but at the same time, just didn't work for me.
I didn't get lost in the reality of the movie ever. I always felt the CGI, always looked fake to me. It always looked like the background of, like, you know, like a video game.
Screensaver. That's what I felt like. This is a screensaver.
Yeah, it's like one of those, I'm interested in looking at this from an artistic viewpoint of how you built it, but it never feels real. Whereas some of the sequences where they spent more attention on, like, there's this one geisha robot that, like, goes into a spider walk all of a sudden and, like, it gets into action. That's a really cool sequence. That's a cool-looking, like, special effects sequence that clearly they were like, okay, we need to make this look as good as possible.
Because it's also practical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But there's so much of it that, yeah, you're like, okay, well, one or two more passes and this would have been more believable. Another thing that really bothered me with that is there appears to be no one in the city. If you notice that, how often they're, like, on the streets and there's no one there.
Yeah, there's
like
two cost more money.
There's, like, two or three extras or none at all. There's, like, street chase sequences in the middle of the day and there's nobody on the street, no other cars on the street, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's a weird detail, but I felt that as well.
That's one of the, like, just the weird little details that stand out to you that really kind of drive home that this wasn't really good. I mean, and it's weird where they put those details, because one of the things that I picked up on were that the director must really, really, somebody on the staff really loved Mamoru Oshii, who did the original animated movie Ghost in the Shell, because there are Mamoru Oshii references all throughout this movie.
Yeah, something I would never have picked up on.
Yeah, like, so the fact that there's that basset hound that keeps showing up, that is something that happens in all of Oshii's movies.
Whereas Batu likes to feed the wild dogs in the city, and the primary one is a basset hound.
It's a detail that seems to go nowhere.
Yeah, and that's something from the... Well, there's a lot of details that go nowhere. I mean, guess where they came from.
If anything, I think the point of that is to... And was to have a connection point where she still feels so not human, and then these animals react to her as a human, and I felt like that was supposed to be this sort of like, oh, it's a... I guess this puppy is cute.
That might have been in there. I didn't get that, but that's probably in there. It goes to show how the movie's effective.
And the visual language is so confusing at times, too, because she's having these glitches and seeing things that aren't there. And the first time we see one, it's this cat jumping around in her apartment. And my first thought was, okay, well, I guess she has a virtual pet, and it's kind of on the fritz.
Oh, man.
I didn't think that was supposed to be, like, something that wasn't supposed to be there.
I can't wait for virtual pets like that. I would have, like, 18 cats if that was the case. You don't have to feed them. You don't have to clean their litter box. Yeah, I'm all about that. Tactile feedback gloves with the purring. Come on.
I think one of the big problems of this movie is that it is such a straight, to a certain extent, a straight adaptation of the original 1995 film, where they kind of lift entire action sequences, but they never feel as compelling visually or kind of emotionally as that original
movie. And it's just it's such a weird thing that they honestly rip it off, and I mean, like, they ripped it out of the other movie and stuck it in here. And hell, they even borrowed major chunks of Standalone Complex, the TV series. Like, Kuze is the big bad in season 2.
Go ahead.
No.
Well, I'm sort of okay. So that's not. I haven't seen the original anime, so I come to this pretty fresh. It's like a blind spot in my nerdness that I'm not as up on anime as probably. And that was definitely one I always meant to see. And
God help us, it's been that's 20 not, years ago.
So, but in watching it, I did feel like you're talking about that. I kept thinking this probably works better as an anime because the world meshes better. Whereas here, I think the over reliance on CGI backgrounds with, you know, actors in the foreground is distracting. And it never, I had a hard time feeling sort of lost in the movie or getting wrapped up in it because I was always very aware of that. It felt kind of fakey despite great design or great look. And so, but is he not the bad guy in the original movie?
No, in the original movie, it was a guy known as the Puppet Master who was doing things like possessing other people. He was hacking their ghosts. And that was a major plot point. Like, and one of the problems I had with this, and you were saying how, like, the CGI was keeping you from connecting with it. The scripting was keeping me from, and the directing was keeping me from connecting it too. Like, there's an action sequence involving a garbage truck and two guys who are clearly have been possessed. And when they're interrogating him, you find out that one of them has this entire fictional life. like his entire life has been invented and stuck in his brain. And in the comics and in the movie, it's this kind of devastating moment of like this guy has been like his entire life that he remembers is a lie. Mm-hmm. And in this, it's just a minor detail. And you don't really feel anything for this dude when he's had his entire world turned upside down.
I think that's the problem with the coldness here inherent is because the movie never slows down enough to really let you emotionally connect with anybody here and what they're going through, including the major, which the whole point of this thing should be that
yeah,
we're
never really
connecting
about, like,
with the major, you know, realizing that she has a whole nother existence, that life isn't what she thought it was, you know, and that how that would emotionally impact her. It never really, it just doesn't give you enough time to feel anything for her as a character there. And it's partially because, like I said, I think they were more concerned with just getting the look right. The definitely appreciating when there's action. I think the action on the whole is really well done here. Like, I enjoyed most of it. Obviously, some of the guys here feel differently, but overall, I enjoyed it. I did feel like the stealth suit was a little chintzy.
My whole thing is that the action felt muted the entire time. I think this film is really hurt by its PG-13 rating. When I think of Ghost in the Shell, I think really visceral violence, gore, blood. I mean, that's what I kind of wanted from this movie. Everything feels like they were like, we can't show any blood.
Yeah.
Can't show anyone losing any limbs. And when that, even when people do lose limbs, it's just, it feels so... It kind of feels like something you'd see in a Marvel film. That's fine that they do in those movies, but it just... It's like they didn't want to go the extra mile to show like, this is something unique and different.
Yeah, and it's hard to make the characters feel like badasses when the fight scenes are kind of that muted, like you said. If there was ever a time to John Wick the shit out of something, this would have been it.
Yeah, you feel like it could have gone so far that way, but then again, you still have something that's going to do nothing but distract from the ghost of this movie, the soul of it that's supposed to be there and just really doesn't translate very well.
Yeah,
you're like, okay, then you're just making a really cool, like, a glossy action film, and this felt like he didn't know what he wanted to make.
I am utterly convinced that there is at least a 3-hour cut of this movie that is sitting around somewhere, because this feels really disjointed. A lot of scenes don't flow from one to the other, and we've introduced a whole lot of characters that we're supposed to give two shits about that we almost never see. I mean, we spend all of our time with Batu and the Major, which, okay, cool, they're, like, the main characters of this. But we've also, like, spent enough time with Togusa and some of the other, and Bourma and some of the others, that we're supposed to be like, okay, yeah, this is Section 9, they're all badasses, we never really get a chance to see them. And hell, there was one character who I would need to go back and rewatch. I swear to God, he was never introduced until he shows up.
Oh, wow.
Huh. Well, anyway, let's go into final thoughts, and then we'll do spoiler discussion. Harris?
So I cannot separate this from the movie, from manga, or from the TV series, so that is going to inevitably color how I saw it. It doesn't compare. It looks like somebody's live-action fan remake, and while it's pretty, it's well shot, I mean, it's visually interesting, it's soulless. It has no ghost. And I'm kind of... The only thing I can think is I'm looking forward to when somebody takes this, cuts it down to, like, maybe 7 minutes, and turns it into a music video. And I think it would work better as a music video than it does as a narrative. If you really want to see a visually stunning, haunting, philosophical movie, see the Mamoru Oshii Ghost in the Shell. If you want to see more action, more interplay with the characters, watch Standalone Complex. It's still available on Netflix. This is honestly going to be 5 out of 10 really creepy geisha robots.
Can I ask you this? Everyone tells me Standalone Complex is the best of the Ghost in the Shell.
Do you have to have
watched the previous Ghost, all the previous Ghost in the Shell stuff that came out?
No, it is completely separate. It is a separate storyline, separate universe entirely.
Okay. Rob Summers.
I would say I probably like this movie probably more than you guys did, only because I feel like if you like sci-fi, if you like comic books, this movie will at least kind of satisfy that itch. But I don't think it's a really great film. I don't think you connect with it emotionally. It's not as exciting. It looks good, but it kind of looks fake. And some of the ideas don't feel probably as fresh as they did in the original. I think that it's kind of an older it feels like 90s sci-fi to me. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I kept thinking that all the way through. I was like, wow, remember when this was super cutting edge?
I mean,
and now it's like everybody's done this.
Yeah, it just feels like if you see, I mean, having watched all the movies and read all the comics, like The Matrix, obviously, so many things influenced by the original property. It just feels like an echo. It's unfortunate. So kind of like the way Avatar is John Carter of Mars kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So overall, I think if you listen to this podcast, you probably might get something out of it. But I would definitely not go out of your way to see this movie. And I would give it probably 6.5 removable faceplates out of 10. So it was just . Anyways.
Christoph Herrmann? Yeah, that's your name.
I like that. I'm going to talk like this for the rest of the review. Mr. Waltz.
I approve.
Thank you. I was just kind of bored with the whole movie. I will admit, though, like, I've seen the original 1995 film and some of Standalone Complex, and I'm not even a big fan of the original movie. I think it's really obtuse and kind of boring, but I can appreciate it for its really imaginative action sequences. And although the movie tries to tell, a new story, it just kind of ends up feeling really banal and familiar, like you said. And even when it does do the same action sequences, they feel muted and just not all that interesting. Yeah, I didn't really particularly care for any of the performances. I thought Scarlett Johansson was kind of, boring throughout the entire movie. She's really hit and miss with me in general, so that's kind of how I feel about her as an actress.
I'm glaring at you.
I know. I mean, she's been in some great stuff, and I think she's been in some bad stuff. But yeah, for now, I'd probably just give it 5 out of 10 milk baths. That's what they want to say. What is with androids or robots and milk baths?
Yeah,
Alien has
that's
milk.
True.
It's weird.
Milk baths. But you're like,
I don't generally submerge my electronics in anything.
Right.
I think they did the same milk bath thing in the Snow White and the Huntsman too, with the
right.
the Wicked
they
Queen.
Did.
So it may just be like Rupert Sanders' thing.
Yeah. Even though I've seen Ghost in the Shell twice, the last time was less than 2 years ago, I still really barely remember it.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones that, like, I guess when I saw it, I saw Akira first in the theater and it blew me away. I was like, God damn, this is anime? Oh, I think I might be an anime fan. And then not that long after, I saw Ghost in the Shell in the theater and it was like, this was not as good. And I think I'd never really kind of got over that initial letdown for me personally. Also, having read a lot of William Gibson before I saw it, I was like, no, I really like the Gibson stuff better than what they're doing here. I mean, I get there's a lot of people absolutely love Ghost in the Shell, and more power to you. I certainly didn't dislike it. It just didn't connect with me the way it did so strongly, obviously, with a lot of other people. My point being, I felt like I came into this with very little baggage. I was kind of like, okay, what do you got? Let's see how you do with this American big sci-fi colorful movie. And I, even though not all the CGE is finished, there's so much constant detail in this thing that I was never bored because I was just kind of mm-hmm. Where's Waldoing all the neat details that are constantly going on. I mean, no matter where they are, everything is lit up and there's things moving and there's just, I mean, they obviously just spent an enormous amount of time trying to make sure that like this is, you're in this world, even if ultimately because it is overly glossy and a little too unfinished, you never really are convinced by it. I actually didn't mind Scarlett Johansson's performance. I like that she is kind of robotic at first, because I think that was kind of the point, is that she has not really come to terms with the fact that she is a human inside this robot body. She's kind of, I guess, to maybe protect herself emotionally, has decided, no, I'm just a robot. And they address that several times early on in the film, where people were like, we promise you, you're a person, okay? And as the film goes on, she starts to, let herself be revealed more on that level. Michael Pitt, who we haven't even talked to at all, plays Kuze. Interesting choice. I've always heard he's incredibly difficult to work with. But
he seems like he would be.
He made an odd choice at first. When we first see him, he's kind of doing this vocal thing that sounds like when they first started doing voice synthesis on.
Yeah, he sounds like Dr. Spatzo.
Like he's
all that.
Talking in his regular voice, but he's doing it with the sort of beats of a voice synthesis program.
It's like a stutter.
And then he loses that as it goes on. I was like, well, that was an odd thing to do. But he is an interesting character. I kind of wanted to see a lot more of him, and I'm sad we didn't get to see that much more of him. A character that would have been so much more interesting to explore than I thought even the Major was here. I do think there's a lot of good stuff here, but there's a lot of stuff that just never gives you the feels the way the movie expects you to. It's a really pleasant distraction, but that's about all this movie is. I'm going to give it 6 out of 10 times I kind of curved my head around thinking I was going to see Scarlett's nipples, but you never really can.
PG-13, man.
I know.
No nipples.
I know. I got to go watch Under the Skin again if I want that.
It's not Airplane anymore.
All right, so let me address the white elephant in the room. the whitewashing
accusations. Racism.
I really don't want to get super into that discussion because everyone in the world has already had this discussion.
Yeah.
But I will say the film, and I thought this was funny myself, the film directly addresses it in its conclusion, basically, was saying, like, oh, well, she was a Japanese chick, and this corporation run by white people put a Japanese chick's brain in a beautiful white girl's body, which seems like I'm going, yeah, we culturally, our evil characters culturally appropriated Japanese stuff. So, haha, isn't that funny? And I agree, it is funny. I don't think it really necessarily fixes the problem.
No, it kind of makes it worse.
It makes it worse. That's the thing.
Especially the thing that got me is her in the original material, her name is Motoko Kusanagi.
Uh-huh.
So having that, like, oh, hey, yeah, Motoko Kusanagi was the original person and we stuck her in this. It's like, oh, good, you're saying, yeah, we stole her from your material. Now she's ours.
See, they could have got away with it, though. Not that, yeah, that, you know, her being an Asian character, but, like, okay, she's just her own thing where they kind of set up this backstory for her where her name's, like, what?
Mira. They kept the initials.
I thought it was Mary Kelly.
No, it was Miri. Mira something. Mira K something or other.
Well, it was, you know, Anglo-Saxon or whatever.
Yeah, and she had the same initials, so it was still MK.
So it's like, okay, that's a nice little subtle nod to that.
Yeah.
But she's her own character. Had they just done that, and not the fact that, yeah, she originally was an Asian person or a Japanese person, it's like...
And once again, I would dismiss completely the whitewashing argument if this was definitely set in Los Angeles.
Exactly.
I'd be like, no, they're doing a remake of a Japanese film. It's in L.A. Of course most of these characters are white. There's no, you just because it's remaking a film from another country doesn't mean you have to use people of that race for that. But they clearly are setting this in, I don't know, Shanghai, Hong Kong, Tokyo.
Asian land.
Yeah, Asian land. And you're kind of like, okay, maybe this movie could have used more Asian characters in it.
Yeah. You know, at least the majority of the Asian characters are either the bad guys who get shot, like all the kind of, the stormtroopers.
Or the rest of Section 9 who exactly. We barely see at
yeah.
all. Yeah, Beef Takeshi has the most amount of stuff to do, and even he doesn't get very much stuff to do as an Asian character. I did want to ask, Harris, you being so hyper-familiar with all the material there, so what specifically other... Because this isn't just an adaptation of the original movie. What is it specifically taking from what?
Okay, so
is this spoiler stuff?
Yeah, we're on full-on in
spoiler. Okay, so... Most of the movie. So the scene with the beginning where she stealth dives into the room and starts shooting up all the people when the guy's coming in with the guns and the briefcases and the glasses they have
I still think the best scene in the whole movie.
That is all from it. Yeah. The fight scene from everything from the garbage truck to where she fights the guy in the water. That's all from it.
From the original.
Dr. Uyet's secretary with the really freaky hands doing all the typing, that's from it. And also the fight scene at the end with the spider tank, which in the comics and the series is called the Tachikoma.
Doesn't that end up being like their tank eventually at some point?
That was always, it was like, that's like their heavy support and everything else. But yeah, that entire scene comes from the end of Ghost in the Shell, the movie.
It's a super lame climax. I was not particularly interested in.
It should have been...
It felt like the lead-up to the climax.
Yeah.
Like I was like, it seems like they're going to go back and do something awesome, and then I was like, oh, they're wrapping stuff up.
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah.
That was all.
I was expecting a lot more of her actually being a badass, and really she's like just dodging and weaving, and that's about it.
She runs up some stuff.
To be fair, the original Ghost in the Shell, like that climax... is just as disappointing as this.
Yeah.
It's probably, I'm sure the original is a bit more of a cerebral movie.
Well, it's very, it's very philosophical.
Yeah. It's boring.
Yeah.
That too.
Yeah.
So Rob is not going to be rushing out to watch it at this point, I'm thinking. Akira is a better bet.
I've seen Akira.
It's gorgeous, but it's one of those, you better be like ready to smoke a bowl and just talk about what it means, man.
Yeah, I know. And as you said, it does. It feels so 90s science fiction. It's just like, yeah, we've done this. We've been over this material so many times in so many different ways already.
Alternate realities. Now put your mind in a robot.
I'm just kind of amused at how they didn't even bother. Like, yeah, we all know that this is going to be an evil corporation. I'm surprised they didn't just go with Mr. Robot and just straight up call it Evil Corp.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the problem now is with corporations in a movie, the only surprise would be if they weren't doing something evil.
Yeah.
You know?
It turns out the corporations were the good guys, yeah, and then I would look at the movie like, yeah. What the fuck?
I mean, yeah, the idea that corporations are taking advantage of people and doing bad shit is just never a surprise.
No, it really isn't. Anybody else have anything else to add before we wrap this up?
Yeah. When it got to the end and they're playing the actual music, the final song from it is music from the original Ghost in the Shell movie. And that's the part where I was just like, really? Really? Are we just going to cap this with that?
Interestingly, for the Japanese release of this, they have signed all the original voice actors from the cartoon to voice the dubs for this. Which is, I thought was kind of cool.
That's kind of cool, except I feel sorry for the poor bastard who has to be the one to dub over Beat Takashi.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they just keep Beat Takashi. I mean, come on.
Yeah, because he's Beat Takashi.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Keep that dude's ghost always.
Indeed.